This just in. Breaking news.
It's time for the chip race.
It's just come to my attention that WPT Global has signed the Chip Race podcast, and I've never had more questions about the direction of this company.
Those guys?
Not these guys.
We don't need any more Irish ambassadors.
Come on, WPT Global. Was there literally nobody else?
I'll be back.
We're putting the band back together.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
We are back, baby. We are fucking back.
Okay, guys, I hear you loud and clear. The problem is the contracts are already signed. So can you do me a favor? Can you try and say something nice?
You know, I actually am a big fan of the Chip Race podcast. It's one of my favorite top 10 poker podcasts out there.
Welcome to WPT Global, lads.
Hey, guys, welcome to the team.
Welcome to the WPT family, guys.
Wait, how many podcasts are there? 12? I actually love the Chip Race podcast. It's one of my top 12 poker podcasts.
Didn't Daniel Negreanu teach you anything? Those guys suck.
Welcome, welcome, guys. We are back. Yes, we are back for another episode of The Lock-In. We did a reverse slow roll on you, I suppose we could say, our audience last time out. We said goodbye, and it was goodbye from the Unibet-sponsored Lock-In. It is now very much hello from the WPT Global sponsored Lock-In, where I am WPT Global Ambassador David Lappin, and I am joined by WPT Global Ambassador Dara O'Kearney. Dara, how's it going?
It's going great. I even have the patch to prove it. So I think, you know, we know who the real ambassador here is.
I have no patch yet, but I believe they're in the post.
We'll send you one. Don't worry. We don't want you to feel that. We don't want you to feel left out. Yeah, no, we're obviously thrilled to be joining WPT Global, the second biggest site, I believe, in the world. There's a certain irony to the fact that I am joining the second biggest site as the as an ambassador, given my penchant or infamy for coming second a lot.
That your name in Irish means second.
My name does mean second in Irish as well, yeah, among other things. Most Irish words mean about 10 different things, but second is definitely one of them for Dara. It's exciting times. We're very happy to be associated with such a great brand, and there is some exciting stuff coming up in Ireland as well, specifically with WPT Global, that we can only tease but not talk about yet.
Very good, very good. Well, look, Dara, we made that short video there. It went out obviously on our socials a few hours ago, initially teasing and then announcing our partnership with WPT Global. It was at the top of the show as well earlier today. We put out the announcement video, the proper video, after the teaser one, of course. And thank you to Doug, Brad, Matt, Tony and Porrick for being good sports there, by the way. Now, Dara, in that teaser video, so the first one, as you recall, you seemed to genuinely miss me as you looked longingly into that photograph you had of me on your phone. Were you tapping into some real feelings there, or are you just that good an actor?
I don't think I'm that good an actor, but I don't think anybody watching was particularly convinced either. certainly my wife gave me some abuse for it afterwards, and I did tell her, I mean, this was obviously David's idea, so.
Well, shout out, actually, speaking of which, to our better halves, Mireille and Sharon, who helped us with that teaser video, both stealing the show, if you ask me. One final question on this, Dara. It's obviously great to keep the show on the air. When we announced our departure from Unibet at the Irish Open, we were genuine. We didn't know what the future held. We knew we wanted it to continue. We knew we wanted to partner with the company that shared our vision for poker and would allow us the space to be as independent as we can, to be as close to independent voices as sponsored players, I guess, can be. How happy are you that it is WPT Global that we found our new home in that respect?
I'm extremely happy. I mean, something of an open secret among certainly our inner circle that we have viewed WPT Global for a while as the kind of natural next step for us if our partnership came to an end with Unibet as it did. There were actually some discussions last year. It didn't happen then. So very, very, very glad that it's happened this time. Know a lot of the people in WPT Global. Cameron, who is in charge of WPT Global Ireland, I've known him for years. He's one of the people that impresses me most in the poker industry. And also, you know, consider him a friend at this point. So yeah, it's a very smooth transition, thankfully.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And actually, shout out to Cameron for his little cameo in our video as well. We have never been fans of the hard sell on this show. So I can tell you now that we will rarely, if ever, say something like sign up to WPT Global using referral code CHIPRACE, even though this show's continued existence absolutely relies on you doing so. Yes, I'm talking to you out there, our audience. It is vital for us. Okay, so it looks like somebody did sign up there. We can keep going. That's basically how this works now. The card appears, and then as soon as somebody signs up, we're good to go again.
So we're basically like a jukebox. Every time somebody puts a coin in, you get a bit more chip race. And the coin in this case is somebody signing up. And then if nobody signs up for a while, there'll just be a long, gloomy silence, like in a particularly grim pub in the middle of nowhere.
Joining us this week will be none other than the Triton WPT Global Slam winner herself, Cash Game Beast, Tournament Beast now these days, Joanne Liu. But before we bring Joanne on, Dara, let's dive into a few of the recent poker headlines. And when I say headlines, I mean a headline I wrote actually last week, my first article for Pokerati, on Steve O'Dwyer's feud with Daniel Smiljkovic on the topic of late reg, and I suppose like more so on the topic of being late for max late reg. For anyone unfamiliar with this story, Steve has basically raised the alarm on a few occasions now about the sharp practice of showing up 10 or 15 minutes late after late reg has closed. Dara, for a bit of background on this one, we've both written extensively on the subject of max late reg down the years and the inherent advantages of it. Years ago, we campaigned to get rid of those rebuy big add-on games on Unibet. A point I made in the article is how I suppose you can wear two different hats. You can be a player who takes the edges that are available, and you can also be a concerned industry watchdog, let's call it that, who understands that making that edge available is bad overall and pressurize operators to stop or at least curb those opportunities. Can you speak a little bit more on that?
Yeah, I mean, as professional poker players, we're supposed to try and seek every edge. So if there is a legal edge out there, it is kind of our job to make sure that we personally take advantage of it. But at the same time, we can recognize that certain things are just really bad for the ecosystem overall. Anything which puts recreational players at a particularly at a bigger disadvantage than they already are at, is just very, very bad for the ecosystem long term. And the example you used in your article was, for example, the rebuy add-ons that used to be very, very popular back in the day, where people would, you know, typically they were 50s or 100s, and they satellited in lots of recreational players. They were forced in from the start, and then you were allowed to enter just before the add-on, and the add-on was always bigger than the starting stack. So you could effectively buy like three or four starting stacks for two buy-ins. And you were up against recreational players who just had the one starting stack. And in many cases, they weren't rolled even to take the add-on. So, you know, a complete mismatch, very unfair. And we had several meetings early on with Unibet, talking to the person in charge of tournaments at the time, trying to impress on them how bad this was. And it actually took us a long time to get the message through. But eventually, those games did disappear off the schedule because we did manage to convince them that they were so bad for recreational players that it was just, effectively it was a money grab. I have a similar ongoing thing with mystery bounties. I don't like when mystery bounties are allowed really, really late reg in some cases, like, for example, at EBTs, where it's almost at the point where the mystery bounties come in that the reg closes. That's ridiculously advantageous to the pros who know that and disadvantageous to the recs who don't. I've written extensively about the advantages, and unfortunately that has kind of lumped me with the thing of like Mr. Late, Max Late Reg. But the reason why I do it is I think if it does exist, we also have a responsibility to inform recreational players why it's advantageous and why it's to their disadvantage if they're being forced into tournaments at the start and lots of pros can come in much later. And that's kind of always been my view. Now, that's a view which has gotten me some criticism from fellow pros who are like, whose attitude is just like, shut up about it, we're all making money from this. And also, I think a bit more unfairly, some recreational players feel that I'm the guy who advocates for max later edge. It couldn't be more the opposite case. I think later edge really needs to be curbed. It's gotten out of hand. You know, this morning I was looking at Jack Hardcastle's Instagram, and I saw that he max later edged into a GUKPT main event, and less than 20% of the field are left. Like, that's a huge disadvantage to the 80% of the fields who've already been eliminated.
Yeah, that's absolutely mental. Okay, coming to this particular issue, because I suppose it's connected, and that's why I wanted that to be in the prologue, if you will. It stands to reason that if late reg is advantageous, then even later than late reg is permissible, is even more so. There are tournaments where max late reg, I suppose, it's quite busy, you know, lots of people pile in right at the end. I'm thinking WSOP events here in particular, where you see that queue almost going outside the door. I'll freely admit I like to be at the back of that line for these, but should there be a rule that doesn't allow me to do that, if you like, where players must be seated by the restart, presuming that it's at a break? That does seem to me to be the way to fix this one.
Yeah, the back of the line rule was a WSOP rule, which was down to the fact that so many people were late regging that they weren't able to seat everybody by the time late reg closed. So the basic rule was, so long as you're in the line, that's fine. But of course, what was happening was people were joining the line, and then as other people joined the line, they were moving to the back of the line and continually moving back, and often getting in, you know, 30 minutes or even an hour later than later edge had actually closed. And, you know, last year they changed the rule at the WSP to say that you actually had to be in the line when the later edge closed, and nobody else could join the line after that. So if somebody else did join the line, you couldn't go behind them because they weren't in the tournament anyway, which, you know, definitely helps. But I mean, I think that's kind of a minor issue. I think the real issue is just how long later edge goes on for in these tournaments. You know, arguing over somebody getting in 10 minutes or 20 minutes strictly after it's over, you know, okay, in the case of Smiljković, it looks like he's pretty much close to cheating, or maybe even cheating. He's taking advantage of the goodwill of the staff who all know him, and, you know, he's basically pleading, guess, oh, I've just arrived, sorry, can I get into the tournament? And, you know, there are a couple of other professionals that I know of who do similar things, and that is definitely, you know, at least going right up to the line, probably even over it. But, you know, if later edge on every turn was only 3 or 4 hours, then I don't think people would be as worked up. But in some cases, later edge is running into day two of tournaments now, and you're getting closer and closer to the money. So, you know, that extra 10 or 20 minutes can be very advantageous.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, and fair play to Steve O'Dwyer for sending that alarm. I hope just an awareness of it out there. Steve was sort of concerned himself personally by the fact that making a big stink about this made more people aware of the angle. And that was one of his concerns about going public. But he ultimately felt like it was worth it now because it was becoming too commonplace. And actually, he needed a bit of support from the Matt Savages of the world, other TDs. The TDA conference obviously comes up during the World Series, and maybe it's something that they'll discuss and have a more hard and fast rule for. I hope they do. Speaking of the World Series, it has kicked off in the desert. There's a new app, which looks like a nice piece of kit. It's getting good reviews from the players. It's obviously the type of thing we're pretty used to, actually, over on this side of the pond. Stars have had an app of this nature for years now. But it is nice to see the WSOP move into the 2020s, finally. One thing that has not improved, however, it seems, is the standard of dealers. I know we say this every year. Now, don't get me wrong, there are some really, really brilliant dealers and floor staff out there at the WSOP, but there are also some really, really inexperienced ones too. Sinead Davenport posted some hilarious hands on her social media, on her Instagram earlier today as we record, where dealers put all five cards down on the flop. That's not quite right. That caused a little bit of a delay in that hand as they tried to figure out what was going on. There was another incident where players got the wrong amount of chips, which I don't know how they sorted that one out, but apparently it took half an hour, and that's not ideal either. Derek, you've heard a few stories as well, I know.
Yeah, I mean, we hear them every year, but they do seem to be particularly bad this year. I don't know why it would get worse this year. I mean, the basic problem they always have is that all of the best theaters in Vegas work for the Venetian or the Wynn or the Aria or somewhere, and they're not going to deal the series because they have their regular jobs and regular series going on. So they have to get in a lot of dealers from out of town. Now, I know some of the dealers who have gone in the past, you know, a former student of mine, Chris Johnson, who now owns his own casino, for example, and those guys are good, like, because they know the thing, but they do have to cast the net very, very wide, and it feels like it's wider. And the thing about it is, as well, like, the pay isn't amazing. So, you know, you kind of get what you pay for as well. WSOP makes a lot of money. Maybe they just need to increase their spend on dealers. The numbers, I think, are going to be down this year, and that might help things. Some of the problems in the past have been caused by dealers having to work very, very long hours. I think the app as well should be automating a lot of the stuff that used to cause problems. I mean, the app is not new. It was used by GG in the Bahamas, and it got very good reviews there. And I actually have it downloaded on my phone, and it actually seems better to me than the Stars EPT app. It has a lot of very nice features. For example, you know, in addition to knowing who all the players at your table are, you can actually take notes on them. And if in the future those players come back to your table, you know, in a future event, you can see all the old notes that you wrote on that player. So it's very similar to the online experience. So yeah, I think that is a major improvement. And I don't want to just bash the WSOP for the sake of bashing them. It is difficult every year with the dealers, but I do feel that's one thing they could do better on.
Well, Dara, it looks like something you've been doing, I've been doing as well, is tracking the numbers of these early events. I personally suspect too that the numbers will be down on last year. Admittedly, still a very big number, but I think they might have peaked in 2024. So far, the numbers are pretty similar overall. The 5K was actually up 10% on last year, but the lower buy-in stuff is down maybe 5% overall. The first real canary in the coal mine, though, is that 1K mystery bounty, which has 5 starting days this time around instead of 4. That's the first proper test, I think, because that's the first heavily recreational field that will give us a sense of, you know, what the numbers are going to be for this. Last year, I know it got 18,409 players, a huge number for the kind of opening marquee sort of weekend event, if you want to call it that. This year, over the first 3-day ones, they've got pretty much the same, maybe a tiny bit above what they got in the first 2 days. So they maybe are on track to get there on this one, but it will be interesting to see if they're any lower than 18,409. Dara, have you heard about some overlays in other parts of town? That's another indicator that maybe numbers going to Vegas might struggle. Economy is obviously sort of in a recession, even though maybe not technically so. People are a little bit more watchful, you know, just the general cost of living has gone up in America. And of course, the stuff we talked about on the last episode, where maybe there's a tentativeness to people traveling to America at this particular point in time.
Yeah, the WSOP has boomed in the last few years post-pandemic, as people were very eager to get back to live poker, and the American economy was booming. I mean, it was the envy of the world. Different situation this year, and people don't feel as good about the American economy. A lot of Americans I know are sort of already tightening their belts. So, perception is reality in this case. If people feel that they don't want to be spending too much money in poker, I think it will affect the smaller buy-in stuff more than the bigger buy-ins. And I think it will also affect the other properties. And on that subject, yeah, I have absolutely heard of overlays already. I think it was Ryan LaPlante who's predicting that this will be the summer of overlay. Although when I said this to my friend and study buddy, Turlock McCabe, he said, don't worry, by the time we get there, they'll have cut all the guarantees. They'll just accept the new reality. Yeah, there have been some significant overlays. One tournament in the Golden Nugget that needed roughly 70 runners only got 2/3 of that. So there has certainly been value there for the early birds. Most Americans I talk to kind of think that, yeah, all of the smaller events are going to be a bit down. But the main event will probably come in around the same number. People are talking about, you know, Bitcoin Bitcoin is one of the few things going very, very well at the moment, and that and the poker world is particularly coupled to Bitcoin, unusually so. So many poker players were early adopters, but that kind of only affects like the top people, the types of guys who play 10Ks maybe. I don't think the average guy who's thinking about playing Return for Warriors or the 1K seniors is going to be too heavily invested in Bitcoin. So yeah, I would say overall, my prediction at this stage would be, and you mentioned that the 5K actually got more, which is true, but it was a different 5K. The 5K that they've already run was the 5K eight-handed, which they ran a couple of weeks into the series last year. And the numbers this year were actually down on what that got last year. So
well spotted.
Yeah, because people like playing eight-handed because, you know, we all remember how horrible it is to play 10-handed, which a lot of WSOP events are these days. So, yeah, I would say overall, numbers are going to be down, not dramatically so. And I'd say the main event would probably come in around the same, maybe even a new record. Who knows if they get enough hype going. It's the kind of thing where, you know, maybe people will just reorient their spending. You know, the average recreation, maybe instead of putting aside 10 or 20 grand to come and play a few smaller events and maybe a few satellites, will just come in for the main.
Indeed. Well, look, moving on, a highlight of the year is the Triton coverage, no doubt. The lads at Sharehand, with whom Darren and I both worked, actually, are the best in the business at producing poker streams. They also produce the WPT World Championship every year. The Triton commentary is pretty slick, it's got to be said. Henry and Ali are both very smooth presenters. And also on this one, I want to give a shout out to former guest Kevin Rabichow, who I think has been a wonderful addition to their roster. The Triton Montenegro was on for 2 weeks. The event was partnered by WPT Global. Dara, that's been a busy 2 weeks for you, I know, on the online side of things, playing all the various big series that are on. However, I know you've made that Triton coverage your soundtrack, maybe like the soundtrack to the grind, if I want to put it that way. Did you enjoy it?
I did, yeah. No, it's absolutely incredible. Like even when it's, for example, PLO, which I don't have a huge amount of interest in or knowledge of, it's still very interesting always to hear the guys. And the technical breakdowns, particularly by people like Kevin Rabichow, are just absolutely top notch. It's essentially free coaching for anybody who wants to listen. It is an area where it's probably the one area where I have heard criticism in the past from some of my higher level students, is in the sort of technical on the technical side. It's always been a very slick commentary team, but adding somebody like Kevin to the mix, you know, Kevin's a great poker brain. Kevin could absolutely be playing those events himself. He's at that level, so that really adds an extra dimension to it.
Well, looking at the results over at the Triton Montenegro, former guest Jason Kuhn added two titles to his impressive resume, extending his lead as a Triton GOAT with 12 titles, more than double anyone else. Former guest Jesse Lonas won the 40K mystery bounty, picking up 12 bounties on the way to victory. And then a few days later, he took down the main event for a whopping 3.4 million. Former guest Alex Foxen took down a 25K early in that festival. Ben Tollerine won the now biggest PLO tournament of all time, the 100K PLO main event for 2.5 million. Seth Davies had a huge festival too. He finally won an event on what I think was maybe his like 27th final table at Triton's. He made sure it was a good one. At least it was in the 50K. He also came second in the whopper 200K Invitational for 4.2 million. And then he got second to Jason Kuhn in the very last event. The person I want to highlight, though, tempting as it is to sort of throw more laurels at Jason, who is, you know, one of the greatest, is Jesse Lonas, actually. I know Seth Davies kind of had the breakout festival. I know Jason had another two, you know, titles to be thrown on the pile, but Jesse Lonas has sort of exploded in a variety of ways, sort of into each circuit, kind of exploded into, you know, low to mid stakes 3 or 4 years ago post-COVID, then immediately sort of made his mark in the 5-10K circuit, and now has made his mark in this much higher buy-in circuit, sort of showing that maybe there just is no ceiling for this guy.
Yeah, I mean, Jesse had an amazing series, and Jesse is the one guy that you can kind of look at and say he's definitely playing differently from other people. I mean, we talked about this during the event, and Kevin Rabichow mentioned it in commentary too. Like, if everybody's playing to the ICM playbook, but one guy steps out, then he's going to prosper. The problem is it more than one guy steps out, both of them are now going to suffer at the hands of everybody else. So it's going to be interesting to see how people react in future and if they allow Jesse the same sort of leeway he was given. It reminds me in a few ways, I have to say, of the hype that was around Adamo a few years ago, and everybody was convinced that he was playing differently. I remember I actually did a breakdown of Adamo at the time for a student who wanted to know what he was doing different. And the answer I ultimately came up with is he's not really doing much different. He's just maybe slightly favouring the aggressive lines in spots where, you know, it's a mix. He's always taking the more aggressive option, or he's taking it more often than he should. But actually, the main thing was he was just running really, really well at the time. And this is something that people constantly, I think, need to be reminded of. In any group of 40, 50, 60, 100 players, there is going to be one guy who's running better than everybody else. And there's going to be one guy who's running worse than everybody else. And then everybody else is going to be in between. So, yeah, I mean, as great as Jesse is, you know, I hate to sound like Phil Hellmuth, but let's wait 5 years.
Fair enough, fair enough. Well, okay, we are going to continue the topic of Triton Montenegro, as it is time now to bring in our guest. She is a two-time EPT final tablist, a high-stakes cash game crusher, and just a couple of weeks ago, she put a new personal high score on the board when she took down the Triton WPT Global Slam in Montenegro for $860,000. Welcome to the show, and coming to us from what appears to be cloud nine, it's Joanne Liu.
Hi guys. Well, I'm so happy to be back for this reason specifically.
So great to have you back on the show, Joanne. Let's get straight into it. This was your first ever Triton, and it was a big one, a 25k buy-in, 155 runner field. It's fair to say that your stack bounced around. You certainly had to be a short stack ninja for a little while on the final table. You were often mid-pack with lots of ICM pressure on you. In a way, it seemed like the complete performance because you had to navigate a variety of stacks. Is that how you look back at it?
Definitely. And, you know, I haven't been playing tournaments too often, but I was just in a lot of really interesting situations, but it kind of really worked out. I laddered because, you know, the other players with similar stacks as me had hands and I didn't, and they had to go all in, and Dan DeVore just kind of knocked all of them out because he had a better hand, and I was really lucky to get heads up with him.
Yeah, and heads up, you had a big chip deficit initially, and you were up against one of the best in the world, in our former guest Daniel DeVoris. I have personal knowledge of just how good Daniel is. A few years ago, I traded him some ultra running coaching for some poker coaching, and I found him to be extremely sharp. Like, when it came to ultra running, he was a complete noob, but straight away he was asking all the right questions and just a very bright guy. But in the match, you kind of ran him over. Obviously, there was a big flip in there too, but it was impressive how you small balled, extracted value, and picked your bluffs really well. Do you have a lot of heads up experience?
I wouldn't say I have a lot of heads up experience, but this is my third final table this year where I got heads up. I have 2 second places, and I finally won my third one. Honestly, I don't think I ran him over. Dan played excellent, and every time I bluffed him, it's not like he was top of range or anything. You know, I was really lucky to get into situations where we could both make the right decision, and I would just edge out by a little bit, matter-of-factly or circumstantially. And yeah, I admire him a lot. You know, I've thought about getting coaching from him, and I think he's one of the best in the world.
Yeah, we love Dan. He's a great guy. Look, much was made of the fact that you are the first female winner of a Triton. I didn't emphasize that too much in my own article about it because I never know quite what to say in that regard. It feels like saying last woman standing or first female winner is weird in an open competition. But on the other hand, maybe it is a story because for more women to be inspired to get into poker, they perhaps need to see people who look like them succeeding in the game. That actually echoes something Caitlin Arnwine said on this show last year. How do you feel about it?
I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I do think it's a big deal. You know, so few women enter these events. You know, high stakes poker is usually like exclusively made for the guys. Like you need to either have such a huge bankroll as one of the VIPs, or you need to have such a community of players who believe in you, who are willing to invest in you, whether that's monetarily or through coaching and support in other ways. And honestly, like, women just don't have that kind of community in the poker world right now. And that's definitely getting better slowly. But, for a lot of this tournament, I was kind of a lone wolf. And I think I used that to my advantage. And, I mentioned this in my winner's interview. I think more and more women are playing MTTs now at small stakes and mid stakes. And in a few years, they're going to get to high stakes, at least a few of them. And even now, when you see the Invitational, there's like a handful of women in there. Like, we're just getting more and more used to the scene now. And it's going to be really exciting to see what's to come.
Actually, to pick up on something there, Joanne, you sort of said that you're a lone wolf, and maybe one manifestation of that. Do you feel like perhaps these were players whose games you are quite familiar with? They've obviously been playing Tritons for years now, and we've gotten to see the best in the world sort of do their thing on that circuit. But you came into that circuit. I'm sure, of course, you've played them from time to time, but maybe they just wouldn't know quite how to size you up.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I'm super familiar with the nitty gritty, like in-depth strategy or how each of these players are playing these days. But when Triton was first coming onto the scene as an established poker, high stakes poker series, I was following the players and the events a lot. And sometimes you just have to get to know like the personalities, maybe their financial situations, what communities they're in, to kind of get a feel for like how they're going to approach the game against me at the table. And I did have an advantage in the fact that, you know, there hasn't been almost any televised footage of me playing tournament poker. And a lot of these players, they have backers and investors, and they have to explain every single move that they make on screen to their investors. And I don't really have to do that. So, and because of my inexperience, you know, I don't have to worry too much about looking silly. Plus, with all of my cash game stream games and doing plenty of silly things in the past few years on stream, I'm very, very used to that. So I could kind of just like go with my instincts and study things and then just try to focus on the game and not worry about the other stuff too much.
And to come back to the aspect of this, where you're obviously the first female winner at your first tournament, Dara, I'm going to bring you in here, actually, at the risk of inducing you into mansplaining this issue. What do you think about highlighting or not highlighting the gender aspect?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Like, I mean, you know well, David, that when we started this show, we had a very ham-fisted approach towards all of our female guests, where we asked them a stock question: what's it like to be a woman in poker? And it gets extremely annoying to a lot of women when they just get asked that question every time. So we kind of figure that out on the fly. I think it kind of depends on the individual. Like, some women, like Siobhan, are very happy to be symbols for empowerment for women in poker, and don't mind that aspect being highlighted and actually welcome it. And as you said, it is important for people to have role models and for females watching to see that there are females in the mix. So it's good that people like Siobhan are willing to do that. But other females are maybe not as happy to focus on that aspect. I remember Chrissy Foxen telling us when we interviewed her that she was much prouder of the fact that she was Canadian number one on GPI rather than female number one. And it is good to see women like Chrissy in the mix as well at the highest stakes. I think it's always a tricky one. And, you know, our friend Elena Stover explained it to me once that a lot of women just don't want to be singled out. They don't want their gender to be sort of their aspect. And Elena also made the point that you made, that there is kind of a hidden barrier for a lot of women, that males form easy social groups where, you know, they help each other out, they stake each other, they coach each other, et cetera, on the way up. And it's a lot more difficult for females, although there are lots of good female groups out there now who are at least trying to push that aspect. I also had to smile when Joanne was talking about explaining something to her backers, because there is one guy who plays Tritons that I run Sims for. And let's say a couple of Tritons ago, he played a hand not great. And he said to me, you need to node lock this to justify it. And I was like, well, why? The hand's done now. What does it matter? And he said, no, I have to explain it to my backer. So,
yeah,
I like it. Actually, it's nice that you mentioned Chrissy there, because she was obviously on that final table with you, Sean. I really liked, actually, something you said in an interview with Craig Tapscott recently. He probed you on the advantages and the disadvantages of being a woman at a table full of men. And you said, Joanne, the beauty of feminism is giving a woman the right to choose whichever path they want to lean in with. There's no right or wrong answer. Can you unpack that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely respect Chrissy's view on how she approaches the game. A lot of other top female pros also take this view, and you know, they don't want to be seen as a woman. They want to be seen as a player. And because honestly, at the table, they're not really using their feminine wiles to their advantage, right? They want to be known for their strategy, their, you know, ability to assess other players, the situation, et cetera, et cetera. To only focus on the fact that they're a woman kind of undermines all the hard work and efforts and, you know, their other skill set. However, I think it's also just a little superficial and unrealistic to approach the situation as if it's not a big deal, because quite frankly, you know, there were three women in the tournament that I played and that I won. It's kind of a big deal that two of us made the final table. Lots of men think that women tend to be inferior in the game. And, you know, of course the top players are men right now, but I would say if you look more closely at the data, women who do choose to play probably on average do better than men in terms of ROI than all the men combined, right? Even though the top players are men right now, so are the worst players. And women are probably, you know, higher than average. So it really just depends on, you know, the qualifiers that you want to look at when you assess the gender issue. And, you know, I'm a staunch feminist, but I'm not like a burn my bra kind of girl. I love men. I love women as well. I think the world is complicated. And I think when you do a cool thing as a woman, it should be celebrated.
Well said. Yeah, no, I actually remember replying to a tweet probably about a year ago. I can't remember why this topic was doing the rounds. I suppose it's one that often does. And someone just subtweeted something along the lines of, why do men win the most? And I just replied, why do men lose the most? Because yeah, they definitely do lose the most amount of money in poker. And I totally agree with your eyeballing the stacks there, so to speak, that maybe men are down far more. Look, the victory at Triton comes after what has been a few years now for you in really quite high stakes games. When we chatted in Vegas last December, you told me that 2024 had been a brilliant year in private high stakes cash games. Now, I know that one has to be a little maybe light on the details when discussing private games, but what can you tell us about your poker adventures over the past couple of years?
Yeah, so I'm very proud of myself that I've been able to sort of adapt to the environment and sort of really pick my spots as to what types of games I'd like to focus on. Obviously, stream games and private games are a whole different beast. And I am very, very lucky that I happen to be female and have some social skills that I can, you know, get into some of these games. And so my focus recently has just been to play in the games that where I probably have the highest ROI, where, you know, but I don't see it as like an environment where like I'm only trying to play against the worst players and make their lives worse. I feel like I'm bringing something to the table and growing the game and making the situation better for everybody. I think I actually learned this from Vanni Negrano, where he said, you know, even if you're playing, when you're playing against a rec, even if you're taking money off them, as long as they have a good time, then, you know, it's a win-win situation. And I fully believe in that approach. And yeah, it has been, very good for me. The first year when I got back into poker was not very good for me, and it was my first losing year ever since I've started playing poker, followed by, you know, my best year ever. So yeah, it's been a fun ride.
Well, Sean, David mentioned that Craig Tapscott piece a few minutes ago. In it, you also spoke about one aspect of the high stakes cash games that you found tough, namely the stand-up game. Most of our audience, fair to say, are tournament players rather than cash players, and actually most of them are online players too rather than live players. So what is the stand-up game for anyone who doesn't know, and what kind of uncomfortable spots did it put you in?
Yeah, stand-up game or squid game is like a mini game. It's like a prop game of elimination, where the last person who doesn't win a hand at the table is penalized, sometimes rather heavily. And that's actually really good for recreational players because it just kind of ups the variance and it punishes the tighter players at the table. So generally, if you're talented or even not super talented pro, if you get a seed into a game and you just kind of play tight, you can tend to make money. But with this format, you really have to get in the mix, and it puts almost every player on their toes, and you really have to adjust to a lot wider ranges and a lot more situations than you otherwise would.
And following up, Joan, do you remember any particularly painful instances of this?
Oh, man. actually, to start off the year was not fun for me. Poker Go Studios hosted a game for WPT Global, a squid game format. And it was like Andrew Roble, Berkey was there. Like, the lineup wasn't super soft, and it was like a really big game. It was like 100, 200, 400. Obviously, like, there's straddles on a lot of the time for that. And this was like the beginning of the year. It was like my second session or something. And I just had, you know, I just like lost three squids in a row. And every time you lose squid, you don't just lose the penalty. It means that like you've tried to stack off going for the squid. So yeah, that's what I mean by upping the variance. It almost plays more like tournament poker in a way, with rebuys. And you know, like if you're coming in like near late registration of a tournament, you can very easily go all in like three hands in a row and bust the tournament. So that's how it went down. I definitely had to like reconvene after that, but luckily it was just a blip on the year.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, look, up next for everyone actually except me is the World Series of Poker, which started last week. Joan, by the time this show airs, you'll be well into your Vegas campaign. You're actually joining us now. Well, I thought it was from Vegas, but now I think it might be from within a cloud, just judging from your backdrop. Dara, you're heading over in a fortnight or so for, I know, a five-week campaign. Last week, I published the third of my three-part panel discussion with 19 poker players about the WSOP. That piece concerned the money and the prestige, focusing a bit on how the sheer number of bracelets have removed some of their luster in recent years. But what was actually quite obvious nonetheless in the piece is how they're still very much sought after. Dara, I'll come to you first on this one because you were in my panel. Thank you for doing that. You said that you rated an Irish Open win above a bracelet, with the exception, of course, of the main event bracelet. In the battle of the big three, let's say WSOP, EPT and WPT, what order would you put them in? And can I remind you who pays for this show now?
I actually don't know who pays. Okay, Dara, you go first.
Yeah, I don't even remember what I said in my response to you, David. So I do run the risk of contradicting myself. But yeah, like essentially it's like apples and oranges. When I started, WSOP was the be all and end all, and I had described it on other podcasts as the Olympics of poker, and that's kind of the way they've seen it. Has been devalued to some degree, but I do still think that it's seen as a big deal. But you know, there's so many of them now. There was a period where sort of our generation of Irish poker players who started around 2007, 2008, we were sort of in a race to see who would be the first to win a bracelet. Now, a couple of Irish players have won bracelets recently, and I bet you most of our audience couldn't even name them. So that kind of tells you that for the public, it's just not that big a deal anymore. You know, EPT has had its ups and downs. It's come back very, very strong. It's still seen as a big thing. You know, our friend Smidge won EPT Prague, and that was certainly a big deal. And WPT, obviously, you know, who are paying for the show now, they're also a very big deal. I mean, the reality is, like, it would be great to win any one of the three, I think.
Very, very well, well navigated there, Dara. Siobhan, over to you. When I got my 19 panelists to all do up their order, I aggregated their scores, actually, to see if there was any pattern emerging. And the averages were as follows. The 10K WSOP championship bracelet, not including the main, got 8.6 out of 10. EPT title got 7.2 out of 10. WPT title 6.4 out of 10. A sub 10K buy-in live bracelet at the WSOP 6.3. WPT Prime was next at 3.1. WSOP online bracelet 2.8. PokerStars Open title 2.7 and WSOP ring 2.4. What order would you have put those in?
How come Triton's not on there?
Okay, very good question. And actually, at least a third of the people mentioned Tritons as being the other thing that they would really value. So I suppose just because they're a little bit less accessible to... Actually, to be honest, with the panel I brought on, I would say they're inaccessible to almost all of them. There would have been only maybe a handful of Triton buy-ins between the 20 people.
You know, someone asked me this question about the WSOP main when I was first starting out in poker, and I said I would much rather finish second, take second place money rather than win the main event, because it's just way too much pressure and I don't want to be in the spotlight. And today, I think my answer would definitely be different. I would totally be the WSOP main event winner, not just because, you know, that's one of the larger prize pools in all of these events that you mentioned. But yeah, I'm, you know, not afraid of success anymore, I guess. And now that I have a Triton title, I have a WPT side event title, not quite the same. Obviously would love to be on the Mike Sexton Cup. Bracelets are nice to have, and maybe I'm just undervaluing them because I don't have one yet and I keep trying every year, and maybe this is my year.
No, look, we hope so. We hope so. I'm going to be honest. I would actually put WSOP last on the list of the big three, again, with the caveat, obviously, of the main. And I think EPT and WPT are basically neck and neck for me. Having played quite a bit of both, the quality of the player experience is a dead heat there. And they actually both sort of value their customers, whereas I always feel like the WSOP treat us like cattle. But obviously, the fields are amazing, so we just suck it up. But it is that playing difference for me that dictates my order. If you feel valued, then you sort of value the brand. I suppose that's how my brain looks at it, simple as that. Joanne, before we let you go, I want to ask you about a really fun thing you did a couple of years ago, which we actually featured at the time and spoke about with Neil Farrell, who was on the show around that time. He wanted to emulate this as a Hendon Mob sponsored quest of sorts through Europe, I think it was. You raced all the way across Canada, traveling east to west for a month with a mission to play live in every province. At one point in the challenge, you were in, I think, Prince Edward Island, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Montreal, and Calgary in the same day. The catch was you had a starting budget of 1,000 in cash and 1,000 in credit on WPT Global, and you had to pay all your own expenses, hotel, transportation, and food out of that. And of course, any winnings that you accumulated along the way. Also, if you had losses, that dug into it. The prize at the end, should you succeed, was, I think, a 50K cash prize, and you get to give away a WPT passport. What happened?
You know, so that was around the time when I first kind of got started into YouTube, and I was like getting ideas from other YouTubers. And, you know, I was watching like Michelle Kerr and Mr. Beast, and I was like, this is kind of cool. Like, how can I put a poker element to it and still, you know, promote the game I love? That's like still kind of doable because it was in November and I had to be in Vegas in December. That wasn't like too dangerous. And WPT Global at the time, you know, encouraged me and sponsored this trip. Thank them for that. And Yeah, it was super stressful. It wasn't easy. I had like my last $300 Canadian on the table. I had traveled all the way to Yukon. Someone hit me up, told me that there was like a home game that they can host me at. And I had like two other stops after that. But remember, I was down to $300. And so I think I had like $300 online, but I even told the host, like, hey, this is my last buy-in. Like, if I bust this one, like, can you spot me like $300 and I'll like e-transfer you later? I just ended up running so good. They probably helped me out because I warned them not to play double board PLO and they insisted. And I ended up, you know, scooping a lot of pots in that game, which is how I won 4K at like 1-2. But yeah, if it wasn't for that game, I'm not sure if I would have finished the trip. But yeah, I think I'm the first person to ever play poker in every province and territory in Canada. And Canada is a big country. I went to some very remote places, was by myself the entire time. I had some friends meet with me in some of the bigger cities, but overall, it's something I'm going to tell my kids and grandkids about for sure.
Yeah, no, it was an amazing trip. Dara, I think you should suggest a similar, maybe slightly less impressive 26 counties of Ireland challenge to our new partners at WPT Global. I'd be up for that adventure, actually. What do you think?
I'm pretty sure there are some counties where there's no actual poker. We would definitely have to go into pubs in most counties, which I think has already been done. I mean, Pádraig Parkinson did this a few years ago. So I don't know if we want to follow in Pádraig's footsteps on that one.
Did Pádraig have to do it whereby, you know, he was living on the money, well, and drinking the money, presumably, knowing Pádraig?
No, I don't think so.
Along the way?
No. No, I think it was when he was sponsored by Winamax, and you know, the French don't know a lot about Ireland, so they kind of leaned into the old, you all live in the pub anyway, so let's follow you around to the pubs playing poker.
Would you do it though, Dara? I think that there are definitely counties in Ireland I've actually not been in, which is probably a bit shameful to admit. I would say there's one or two counties I actually have never been. Set foot in.
I've definitely been in every single county at some point. You're a typical Dubliner, like you just think Ireland is Dublin anyway. So, I guess it would be entertaining just to see the locals because, you know, I know better than anybody else how hated you are outside of Dublin. Every Irish person I know who's not from Dublin absolutely despises you as the typical arrogant Dubliner. So it would be funny to see you dealing with some locals down in Longford or Roscommon.
I'm on for it. I think I could charm them back to my side. I don't know, maybe not. But anyway, going to throw it out there, see if the guys would sponsor that. Speaking of adventures and also, I suppose, WPT passport dollars, before we go, I'd like to quickly let people know out there that if they haven't already used up their WPT Global dollars and they have accumulated them, they can use them in the upcoming WPT Cyprus stop from August 13th through 19th. The cutoff date to let WPT know about that, that you want to spend them there, is August 6th. I'm reliably informed. Starting soon, there will be free roll satellites actually for that WPT Cyprus, so do keep an eye out for those. On that note, a sincere thank you to all the people who contacted us during what turned out to be the shortest hiatus in podcast history. We hope you accept that we were genuinely unsure as to this show's future until quite recently, and from that point on, we hope you understand that we did have to show a little bit of discretion in the final days and maybe even a little over a week. A huge thank you. What a boon to have a guest of this caliber. Xuan Liu, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, guys. Congratulations for getting back on the air. You guys deserve it.
Thank you so much. And a huge thank you to you too, Dara.
Thank you, David. And especially thank you, Xuan.